Welcome to Dog Talk and Kitties Too. I'm Tracy Hotchner. I wrote the Dog Bible, Everything Your Dog Wants You to Know, as well as the Cat Bible, Everything Your Cat Expects You to Know. This episode features one of three guests who were part of my weekly hour-long NPR show broadcast over the air every Sunday on WLIW-FM 88.3, the only NPR station on Long Island where it has broadcast continuously for over 15 years. This show is about dogs, cats, and other creatures who share the planet with us. Please check out my other Pet Talk podcasts at TracyHotchnerPets.com. This show would not be possible without the longtime support of Woruva, the pet food company founded and privately run by David Foreman, who named it after his rescued kitties, Webster, Rudy, and Vanessa. Woruva is a quirky name for a company with whimsical names for the dozens of different cans and pouches of cat food they make. But what sets them apart is how serious David is about high-quality nutrition. They were the first pet food company to use human edible ingredients and process them in the same facilities that make human food, remaining privately owned and run, accountable only to their own high standards. This show is also made possible with the generous support of Dr. Elsie's, the privately owned litter and cat food company founded by Dr. Bruce Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian. He personally created many styles of litter to make sure that even the fussiest cats would not have out-of-litter box problems, the number one reason people abandon their kitties. Dr. Elsie also created his own brand of cat food called Clean Protein, the first dry cat food I can recommend because it's based on the protein found in a cat's natural prey. Dr. Elsie's is also the founding and continuing sponsor of my New York Cat Film Festival, of which I am the founder and director, along with the annual New York Dog Film Festival, which premiere in New York City every October and then travel the USA and Canada supporting local animal welfare groups. Go to dogfilmfestival.com and catfilmfestival.com to find out when we'll be where. A long time ago, I talked to Stephanie Cohen about her work as a therapist with children and their families who are really scared of dogs, the children in particular. She's written a wonderful book called Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs, a step-by-step guide for parents. And what I realized was that there are really a lot of people who have cynophobia. They're scared of dogs. And of course, those of us who are mad about them don't really appreciate how deep that terror is and how paralyzing it is. Stephanie, you've done an amazing job with this book, but I think it's really important that we let everybody know, even the dog-loving fanatics, that there are people really frightened and that we need to be respectful of that and understand it, which isn't really the point of your book. But for the rest of us, I think it's important that we know how deep these fears go and how widespread they are. I think that the job you've done in the book that most captures this issue is so many personal stories, individual children and their families, and describing how the fear expresses itself, the age of the kids. It must be really daunting for you as a therapist to keep meeting these people who have such a hard time with dogs, and you love your own dog so much, who helps you help them overcome their fears. It must be amazing to you that the world is still full of people so frightened of dogs.
Yes. I mean, I think we as dog lovers and parents, and by the way, the book is also good for really anyone who wants to help someone.
That's
therapist,
right. That's
parents,
right.
Teachers. But we don't teach kids early on, I don't think, enough about dogs. Why they do certain things, how to read their body language, when to stay away. And you mentioned respect, and really to learn to respect a dog. And parents always, of course, need to supervise any interactions their children have with dogs. That's like the number one thing.
But we're talking about something so much deeper, Stephanie, and you describe it so well in the book. We're talking about children to the extent of being paralyzed with fear. I mean, absolutely.
Yes.
We're not talking about
paralyzed.
Oh, gee, a kid got bitten in a situation where, oops, you know, user error, parents shouldn't have let that event happen. And then the kid is understandably scared, like you would be after you have a car accident, and then you're kind of scared to drive. But right, you're talking about a fear much deeper.
Yes, I am. And I think what probably I meant to say here was that from the very beginning, if children are kind of exposed to dogs in safe ways and learn a little bit about them, they tend to be a little less scared. But to your other point, there are many, many children whose lives are deeply impacted by their fear. They won't go to sleepovers.
Yes.
Their friends
yes.
tease them. And a lot of people in the world minimize this. Oh,
that's
it's just
right.
a dog.
Yes.
And it's not that at all. It's really significant.
In fact, it reminds me, in reading the book, the whole issue of phobia, it reminds me of those people, separate from the rest of us, who are terrified of spiders or terrified of snakes. It doesn't mm-hmm. come from some childhood trauma. It
That's
doesn't
true.
Come from a story they were told by grandma, avoid all spiders,
true.
Avoid all snakes, or avoid all dogs. It's almost like, well, you're a shrink, and you've seen a lot of this. Is it something in their almost emotional wiring? What could make this depth of fear, in your opinion, which really is not the point of the book? The point of the book is how to cope with it, how to help overcome it little by little by little. But where does it come from, do you think? Somehow it might help to understand it if we could figure out the genesis of it.
Sure. I mean, there are, in my experience, there's four different ways. And I think the one you're referencing is a certain personality, a certain wiring. My experience is these children, this was what was with my daughter, who never had a bad thing happen with her for dogs, but she was petrified, creative, smart, observant, but she didn't understand dogs. So when she saw a dog or when a dog barked, she assumed it was angry and might attack her.
Yes.
And actually, it was probably just saying hello.
Mm-hmm. Or giving a warning of danger outside or the various things that make dogs bark.
Right, right. And I think that's where the educational piece comes in. Once we started to help her understand, well, this is what Casey is saying, she started to understand and process it a little better, and that's how she became less afraid.
But, you know, it's funny. There's a topic that I don't think many of us think about in your book, which has to do with feeling in control and powerful mm-hmm. with an animal, or the opposite, that the animal is not in your control, you don't understand it, and you have no way to keep it from coming at you, jumping on you, licking you, mouthing you, wanting to play with you, or even if it's playing with another dog in a roughhousey way. That can mm-hmm. look really scary to a kid. And
it
I think
can.
What's really great about the book is it gives a much, you know, a bird's eye view from a much lower bird, a little bird, a human that's walking around at maybe eye level with some dogs.
Yes.
And it's a monster. It's huge. Mm-hmm. Why should they? I mean, you kind of think, well, what about all those kids that run right into the burning building? Hi, dog. Maybe those kids need, you know, kind of a reality check. Of course, those kids are the ones who potentially could get bitten because
100%.
Right? Because no one has told them you don't run right at a dog and try to hug it. But
right.
it's interesting that you can have this very different feeling about a dog or attitude towards a dog. And like with any phobias, your book mm-hmm. talks just really step by step the ways to, I don't know if it's, it kind of think, is it desensitized? Is it positive reinforcement for being there? But
yes,
also,
all of that.
But also the idea that it is through the book is you never want to, as you just said earlier, minimize it. To say to a kid, oh, don't be ridiculous. The dog's fine. Come on over here. I'll show you. That's mm-hmm. the thing that can just make the child feel so misunderstood, disrespected, and more terrified. Come on, be brave. Mm-hmm. As opposed
right.
to...
And it's out of their control. Which
completely.
Is what you mentioned.
They're being mm-hmm. forced into the situation. It's sort of like, on a much less dramatic scale, those parents who have socially timid or shy children. Now we know there's a thing called the spectrum, which I guess you aren't even supposed to use the word autism anymore. And maybe some of those kids are or were on that spectrum before we had a word for it. But there were always those parents saying, oh, come on, stop being so shy. Let Mrs. McGillicuddy kiss you. Come shake hands with that big, scary man with a hairy face. You know, there was never, very rarely were parents told it's okay to protect your child's anxieties and fears and say, that's okay, honey, you can wait over there. Just like with the kid with the dog. You don't have to be near the dog. The dog doesn't have to be near you. We're going to we're gonna manage this proximity thing, this eye contact, this touching thing. Do you think it's kind of similar to that of parents minimizing a child's social anxieties?
I very much do. I think the root of sort of good parenting is accepting your child, supporting your child, and trying to help them grow and develop, but at the child's pace. It kind of reminds me of where I thought you maybe were going, were the parents who throw their kids in a swimming pool.
Oh, good God.
And see them
drift,
and then
horrible.
Try to see if they swim. There are parents who do that, or dunk
God.
Them before the. And what happens is the child loses trust and doesn't feel respected. And so, if their fear may actually ramp up because they don't feel safe. So we need to help kids really all the time in every situation, whatever it is, feel safe so that they can kind of relax that fight or flight thing that happens when you have a phobia and feel afraid, so they can just stand in proximity. This is how I start with everything, with a leash dog, take some deep breaths, calm their body, and say, I'm okay, I'm safe. And if that's it, I'm okay with that.
And you start very small. It's interesting because when you're training reactive dogs to other dogs in dog training, it's always done in the same way. There are dogs who simply, and it's not that they're not socialized, it's not that they had a bad childhood or a trauma or they came from a shelter. Some dogs just really don't like other dogs. They don't want to be around them. And if they see one, they want to send it away by barking and kind of aggressive looking behavior. And what you do, as I'm sure you know, because you're very aware of dog training and therapy dog training, like your wonderful Keyshawn and other great dogs, is that you never push the dog. Well, this is not, could even be a dog with children for that matter, but dogs that are phobic about other dogs, you never push them. You stop short of the point where their hackles are going up, where they are trembling or growling or their eyes are getting wide, even before barking. Even before growling, you stop them short of that, and they as a dog who's just, you know, acting autonomically, they don't get to that point of being so ramped up. You stop them short of it and show them nothing bad happened and give them lots of treats. Now, with the kids, you talk about some rewards, too, for kids being brave in the process of being de-dogified.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I've done some workshops for dog trainers because they're actually in a perfect position to help children who are afraid of dogs.
That's true.
And what we're always not really amazed about, but what always is underlined is there are many more similarities between children and dogs where this is concerned, for sure.
That's right.
And the positive reinforcement, so you cheer a child on. My issue is always I have to find that balance between gently nudging when I know they're ready to do more and not having them feel forced or pushed. But in terms of rewards, I have like a little, for the younger children, I actually have a superhero cape which says Captain Positive on the back.
Oh, cute.
And they get to wear that. I have a certificate I give them. And then, depending on the parent and the child, sometimes rewards are, you know, a trip to Starbucks or video. What I don't even know what they get now, but
right,
you know,
something
video
more
games.
Modern version. Yeah,
right, there you go. But something that will help push these kids out of their comfort zone. And it's interesting because I have a pretty good track record, I'm pleased to say, but there was one young man who was so scared and I don't want to use the word resistant, but he was paralyzed with fear. 17-year-old.
My football, goodness.
Football player.
No kidding.
He would not come out of his room. His parents offered him $100, and he was petrified. And that's how I know this is, I mean, I know it, but really underlines this is a real fear.
And I don't think we have to say, oh, gee, I wonder if they're quote-unquote crazy or terrified of many other things, and this is just one small symptom. It is really just dogs when it's dogs, isn't it?
It very often is. Sometimes there are other animal phobias that go with it. But, you know, you mentioned the spiders before. You can go through your life and kind of avoid spiders.
That's right.
You cannot avoid dogs and live a normal life.
Which is funny because those of us who surround ourselves purposefully with dogs
yes.
would think, well, I guess you could if you just wanted to, but we don't realize they are everywhere.
They're everywhere. After the pandemic, which I really realized.
Yeah. More people got them, and now more people are going out with them. And unfortunately, the dogs mm-hmm. really genuinely aren't trained or socialized. And so there's a kind of loosey-goosiness about it. I was just at the chiropractor. Some guy had a French bulldog on a harness with what I thought was a retractable leash because he kept letting it go and jump on me. And I didn't want it to jump on me. I'm not interested in going to my chiropractor and have somebody
right.
being so happy about their precious Frenchie that, you know, it's got to be it was a regular leash. And he would just let it go to jump on anybody and sniff all over them.
Yeah.
It's interesting. See,
that's
disrespectful. And he had no compunction. Grown man. A dog was, and dog was, you know, had no manners, but I'm sure it could have been easily mannerly if you'd ever asked it to be. And I think that's what's going on. Yeah, no sense of respect for other people's space.
Right.
Which is sort of curious. But if I was scared of dogs, that would have, I also didn't want the Frenchie smell all over my legs, all over my pants, because I was going back to the car where my two dogs were and they would not appreciate it. You know, then I would have been disloyal.
They were cheating.
Exactly. Exactly. So you did have someone who failed. You know, this idea of phobias about certain things and children. A friend who I play pickleball with told me this story about one of her sons. Two big strapping guys, very brave and bold. One has gone off to live in Japan. The other's in New Zealand. They're just barely out of college. But when one of them was young and not the other, and they're biological brothers, he was terrified of baseball, Little League. T-ball. She had to sit in the stands with him. This is what she chose to do as a way of being a supportive mother. And I said to her, you're amazing. I could never have done it, but you did the right thing. She said, we'll just sit and watch. And when you're ready, we'll play. They sat through an entire season, Stephanie, on the bench.
Wow.
And he was interested at a distance. Absolutely would not consider going down there, touching a bat or a ball or anything. So, I mean, kids are individuals, and it's really time consuming and exhausting to be that respectful parent and not just, oh, come on, everyone should behave the same way. Everyone should be good socially and good academically and good in sports, or at least some sport, or if not a sport, be very good at something else. And it's hard to say, oh, my kid is so different in various ways, and I'm going to protect and celebrate that. The idea of children being safe is an idea that didn't exist when you and I were growing up.
True.
That concept didn't exist. Our parents maybe raised baby boomers with Benjamin Spock, who was supposedly so free-handed and went against the conservative idea of rapping children on the knuckles and children should be seen and not heard, which sounds like Victorian times, but it wasn't. It was the 40s. Up to the 40s,
right.
And then along came Benjamin Spock in the 50s and suggested that when your child cried, you could pick them up when they were little babies. And this was considered by the old-fashioned people to be way too permissive. Oh, you're going to raise this terrible generation. And then I guess to those people, we were kind of a terrible generation. We were wonderful. We had free love, and we had, you know, against the war. And we, you know, we were you know, not anarchists, but we were libertarians or something.
Right.
And then, you know, the pendulum swings back. And I do think that attitude towards children's psyches and how they're wired and their individuality has blossomed so much into recognition that everyone deserves individual respect. We spend a lot of time on the show talking about respect to each individual dog and cat. They mm-hmm. each are separate. They are not just a beagle or a Persian. They're an individual. And I think we sometimes lose sight of that with little humans. They too are each mm-hmm. quite special. And if there's an area that's really a sticky wicket, you got to help them get through it. And I think that your book, Overcoming Your Child's Fear of Dogs, A Step-by-Step Guide for Parents, which has wonderful drawings in it, kind of animated but cheerful and really helpful. And it is, and there's little tests you can take in there, little questionnaires. It's really helpful to recognize this is a true problem and there yeah. are solutions and they take time. You don't need a professional necessarily, right? I mean, I think your book...
You absolutely do not. Unless, because sometimes parents have a hard time seeing their children in distress. So if you have a professional with you, they may support the parent and the child through this.
That's an interesting point. But then the therapist, if they weren't already pretty hip to your ideas, which are very solid, shrinky kind of ideas, you didn't invent something. You took all the knowledge that's out there and you focused it in on fear of dogs in children. Yeah. It really would work for fear of dogs for anybody of any age. The 17-year-old wasn't a child anymore. He was a young man.
I work with adults too.
Right, exactly.
So it works for them.
But I think that the therapist should read the book before they take on clients with this specific issue because it's really specific. You can't generalize it to something else unless someone comes in for spider phobia, which I've forgotten the clever name of. But people, as you said, probably are not going to seek out professional help because you can avoid spiders.
Well, yes. I mean, it's interesting. A few therapists have done consults with me. And one therapist said, because traditionally with exposure therapy, psychologists and therapists will say, okay, start by looking at pictures, which I do also.
Right.
And then this particular therapist in California sent the child and the mother to a dog park.
Oh, dear.
To look at dogs. And I thought, oh, my God, that's way too much too fast.
Yeah, it is, because I don't even like to look at dogs in dog parks. It makes me nervous.
No, me neither.
There's always a fight brewing. And there's some owner who's completely unconscious drinking their coffee and chatting.
100%.
While their dog is humping somebody's head, you know.
Right. So this child was flooded with fear, and they took a bunch of steps backward.
Yeah.
So
we don't want that to happen. And I think it's arachnophobia, it occurs to me. Because I mean,
you are right.
We should know that word because I don't know why it's sort of been around in horror movies or something. We don't want dogs to feel like a horror movie to children.
No.
And I think that the acknowledgement that there are children with varying degrees of fear, and your child doesn't have to be paralyzed, but if your child, and there's so many anecdotes in the book that are, I'm not usually an anecdote reader. I'm like, yeah, get to the point. Tell me what to do. The anecdotes are really valuable because you look at children and the various ways that their lives have complexity and how dogs intersect with that. Like you said, sleepovers, or even mm-hmm. go to another kid's house after school. If there's a dog there, and maybe you're not terrified to death of dogs, maybe you even have one at home, but it's a nice little West Highland White Terrier. And at the other person's house, they have a Leonberger. I mean, it's possible, and it could be friendly, but it looks like something from the dark ages, and it's coming towards you. So, mm-hmm. you know, there are so many social situations where dogs cross the path of kids, and it's important to listen when a kid says, I don't want to go to that person's house. Well, we might now. We're all so sensitized. Is someone molesting you there? Is somebody bothering you? Right? It's not that. No, it's just the dog. I mean, it isn't that they don't give good after-school snacks. That's not the reason.
Right.
I mean, listen.
And what I try to do then is I try to work with them and suggest lots of people will put the dog in a crate or in another room, but that doesn't solve the problem because then they're not learning to manage the child's not learning to manage their discomfort. So what I now suggest is that the owner be requested to leash the dog, come out of the house, meet the child, even if that means standing 3 feet away, letting them see each other, because as you know, dogs are often much more excitable when you walk into their home as opposed to greeting you outside of their home.
And depending on the dog. And also putting a leash on makes some dogs more excitable. I mean, there is no rule of thumb other than, you know, that would be nice if you had a friend's child's mother willing to do that and do it right.
Right.
It's tricky.
Right.
There's a lot of pieces to it. Oops, I let go of the leash. Well, now you've looked at it for 3 minutes. Now it's fine, right? You're fine now, right?
No, you're right. You're right.
You know, I'm just going to say no. It's sort of like when they used to say, well, people can have one glass of wine while they're pregnant. There's not a lot of people that drink only one glass. So probably have to go back to the no booze while you're pregnant, because most people think, well, one glass is good, two is okay, too. I think it's the same thing in this situation. Well, the kid can see my dog's friendly. Meanwhile, the dog looks terrifying to the child. The mouth is open. The tongue is hanging out. It's bouncing around. To us, that's a happy dog waiting to greet us. To that kid, it's like a scary, you know, a mouthful of very white, bright, sharp teeth.
Yeah.
And a wiggly body, and the whole thing looks, I think just in winding up, one of the great things you have in the book is teaching kids to teach dogs to sit. And then in that moment, in doing that, the child has control over the dog and feels agency and feels empowered. And you obviously can only do it after you've gotten past the really harsh part. And you have to do it with a dog who will respect the child. But if the child's holding a pretty good snack, and also the dog isn't grabby, because the last thing you want is for the dog sits and the kid feels great and then the dog snatches it and their teeth touch the fingers, which can happen.
Right. Yeah.
So you should, you know, teach feeding like a horse. There's a, you know, so there's a lot of parts to making dogs seem less onerous, but I think you've done a wonderful job with the book, and I think it's a book that is really valuable. It'd be great to have it in classrooms, because also teachers could use it to talk to other children about some children are scared, sort of outing the issue, even without pointing a finger or bringing up anybody's name, that all children need to understand that you may love a dog, you may love your dog at home. There could come a time, or you could have a friend who's scared of dogs, and it's a real thing. And we have to help them. So I think that's
a really good point.
The intention of the book. And I think that all kids should know about this, even the ones that are already consumed at age 7 with the idea they want to be a veterinarian or a dog trainer. You know, that's great, but others may not feel the same way. Stephanie Cohen, thank you so much for being here and for doing this wonderful job, really, for all of us.
Thank you, Tracy. Really, really appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed the show. There are a few more special companies that make this show possible, and I hope you'll try their products because they support my mission to entertain you with valuable information and advice. This show is supported by Earth Animal, which is privately owned by Dr. Bob and Susan Goldstein, where they create holistic pet wellness products with an emphasis on their stewardship of the Pet Sustainability Coalition. Earth Animal makes a dazzling array of healing products for dogs and cats, as well as the innovative dog chew, No Hide, and the hybrid dry food, Wisdom, which is sometimes all that my picky Weimaraner Maisie will eat. The show is also brought to you in part by Evermore Pet Food, privately owned by two dedicated women who take human edible, ethically sourced ingredients to gently cook dog food that is then frozen in pouches and shipped right to your door. They founded and run their own company and answer to their own high standards without interference from venture capital investors. My dogs love it every single day.